Hey, thank you so much for joining us today on From Start to Finish podcast with Christina Faith. I am your host, Christina Faith, where we inspire people to live authentically and start and finish their dreams. For listening and enjoy the show. Hey, how you guys doing? This is Christina Faith from Start to Finish. I am here with your man, John Saddington. John is a guy that I have truly just gleaned from over the years since I was introduced to him about 6 years ago through his blog. He's gone through so many different transitions, but he's remained consistent about blogging in the midst of all of his transitions. He has the best app of 2014 with Desk.pm. It is an amazing blogger tool that you'll see on my site that I use on a daily basis. And he's also the creator of Iron Yard, who creates a coding school. And it's just amazing to see the things that he's doing. Hey, John, how are you doing?
Good. Hey, good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I am excited to talk to you as always. You and your wife and your kids are just... You guys are just an inspiration to the ability to continue to persevere in the midst of doing what you're created to do.
Thanks so much. We've known each other for a while, so you've actually had some opportunity to really kind of see the transitions in real time over the last few years.
We've both gone through a lot of transitions in the last few years, and you're still an information source that I think that a lot of people are not realizing how valuable you are, and that's one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on the show, because I've seen a lot of bloggers throughout the years, but you just told me that you reached 9,000 posts in how many years?
I'm not sure exactly when I started on this blog. I could probably quickly check, but I just randomly saw that I had 9,003 blog posts published on John.do, at least this current iteration. I just thought that was kind of cool. So creeping up on 10,000. Yeah, so I've started blogging in 2001.
Okay. I got
more formally understood. This blogging was really uploading HTML files, static HTML files in reverse chronological order to a web server. And then I moved to a kind of a content management system, Zanga at the time. Mm-hmm. In early 2002. And so since then, I've been using content management systems to publish content. But yeah, I've been doing it for 14 years.
Yeah. So how did you, so you talk a lot about on your blog about how you got started. How did you get started in blogging? Because you got started in blogging before it was even popular.
Yeah, it was more of developer documentation than anything else. I was literally just writing really almost public FAQs or public documentation of the projects that I was working on. And I was spinning it in such a way that I was more like, hey, how are you doing? This is what I worked on last night. And it in a lot of ways, it was a blog post, but it would probably be classified in a number of different ways at the time. But really, things accelerated when my girlfriend at the time signed me up for Zanga, and she noticed that I was doing this, and she actually created an account for me and said, here, you should use this. And I was like, okay, fine. And I quickly realized that this is a much faster and more fluid way of writing content for the web, and it kind of stuck.
Yeah, definitely. So, and then now 14 years later, you're still doing it. You have an uncandid ability to really listen to people, but and kind of like digest what they're doing. Where does that come from? Like, is that just your analytical mind, or are you through blogging, have you really just become extremely self-aware, and that allows you to be self-aware with others?
That's an interesting question. I'm not entirely sure where kind of the source is, but mm-hmm. I think writing is an incredible way for anyone to really understand their own thoughts. Now, mm-hmm. that's not somewhat obvious and self-evident, but most of the time, the things that we think about, they're not really well formed. They're almost nebulous in nature. You can think about how many times someone has asked you a question about something that you kind of know about, but you don't really know about, and you really stumble through an answer, or you're trying to make one up on the spot. At least I do. I try to make something up. But when you write, it forces you to slow down your thinking. I'm an autistic adult. I have ADHD, and so my mind is about 1,000 miles a minute all the time. And writing was really a therapeutic process. It's forcing me to slow down, to really be concise with what I think. And as a result, I've encountered a ton of different thinking mm-hmm. last 14 years, and I've written about it. So Consequently, if someone asks me something about a topic, there is a high likelihood that I have not only thought about that particular topic, but I have written about it. Mm-hmm. So I can kind of summon up those particular areas that I'm not an expert in, but then I can say, hey, I have an opinion about that. I've actually thought through that, and let's have a dialogue. So it doesn't make me incredibly, you know, smart or anything. It's just that I've done it and haven't quit.
Here's Dawkins and Dawkins with Get Down.
Position got you respect, yeah. You waited and you made it, had your head up in the clouds. Now it's storming, but you never had to weather stormy weather. You just wanted to get better. Do you know how to get you out? What makes you think that you are above the fall? Remember time and chance, it happens to us all. It's on you, it's a chess game, and it's your move. Under pressure is the measure of what you say that you believe. Ain't it crazy? Yeah, it's crazy. Could be nothing, but then maybe. A little something could be that one thing that might cost you everything. Oh, what makes you think that you are above the fall? Remember time and chance, it happens to us all.
Not quit. You know, when we think about people who start and finish, like, what is the defining factor for you? So a lot of your blogging has to do with you being able to reflect and digest. What do you find that stops so many people from remaining consistent in blogging?
That's a great question. I think for a lot of people, they see it as a means to an end. When writing really is it's an end to itself. You know, especially on the digital context, people are writing content, or what we, I guess, are more understand as content marketing. And so the goal is to help promote some product, some service, some company, some startup or something. And the goal is to sell, to make money. The problem with writing is that it's very hard to qualify and sometimes quantify whether those results are actually working. And so most people will quit if they don't see the traffic, if they don't see the conversions, the traction. Then they say writing is useless. And I think they miss really the gem of why writing exists. I think it's to tell stories, and I think it's to understand our world and ourselves. So I think that's where most people kind of fail to see the larger picture, is that writing is important because it's important, rather than writing is a means to an end, and if you don't get there, then you should go do something else. So I try to encourage everyone to write, period, and not worry so much about the results, especially in our world where results are almost everything. And so we can really get to the heart of the matter and really see the long-term benefits of what it's really about.
Definitely. I think that was like a big thing for me, is that I had to realize that writing is a part of my DNA. And the more you realize that writing is a part of you, the more you'll write, not just for other people to read, but for yourself. So for me, writing has become a place of comfort and solace, as well as reflection, as opposed to, oh, I need to write because I need views. So granted, you know, I spoke with, we had a podcast with Carlos Whitaker on, and he was talking about, you know, consistency and just remaining consistent. But the more that he wrote, the more he discovered more about himself. And that's something that I'm really learning about myself, is that I don't have to run away from being a writer anymore because, you know, a project didn't work or this or that. I'm a writer because that's just a part of who I am.
Absolutely. And so, which means, I think, on a corollary thought, is that I think everyone should try to write, but I don't think they should be married to it. And, you know, I think everyone should try it, see how it fits, but not everyone is necessarily a writer. Mm-hmm. And I think that's okay. I think it's okay to try it, to continue to do it, but not see it as something that they have to do.
So in your journey with Desk.pm, can you kind of like tell us about your journey? Because a big part of, you know, you being a writer and a blogger is that you've created tools for writers and bloggers. Even with PressGram, it didn't do what you desired for it to do, but your heart behind it was still to help people in that arena. So what causes you to want to make apps for, you know, bloggers? Is it because you're a blogger, or because you just see so many things that you want to help improve?
It's definitely 100% the latter part of your statement there. It's, as a developer, I've been a software developer for 17 years now, I suppose. And so that really is my primary skill set, is building software. But I built applications for blogging because I wanted to find ways and better ways for me to publish content, I think. So it was a very selfishly motivated kind of initiative and project. It's, hey, is there a way that I can do this faster, better, cheaper, more effectively? And what's so neat is that every single time I have spent and built these applications, is that they're very accessible to many other people. And another way of thinking about this is, as I have scratched my own itch, I have realized that other people in the market also had a very similar itch. And in some instances, not all, but in some instances, I have, quote unquote, brought those things to market. So brought those things so that other people, you know, customers can buy them and then use them for their own blogs and needs. PressGram, which was a mobile application, was, I think, a product win. I thought it was an incredible, great product. I still think it's best in class. Financially, as a business, though, it was a really massive fiscal failure. Mm-hmm. Desk, on the other hand, you know, has done quite well fiscally and financially, and I've been very happy about that. Whether that will scale into something much more, is everyone's guess, I guess. And who's to know? But I'm having a great time, and I still use it every day, and that's how I deliver my content. So I'm really, really happy about that.
This is Phil Daniel with Wake Up, off of his EP, Wake Up.
Which way the wind will blow,
So coming down to desk and the fiscal, so I see that, you know, I read on your blog that it hit the slump. So in the midst of the slump, how do you encourage yourself? Because I think as entrepreneurs, that's like the biggest thing that causes so many people to draw back is once, you know, as it builds and momentum builds, we're like, yeah, we're encouraged. And then once it stops, how are you working through, you know, where it was a month ago to where it is now? And is that causing you to work harder, or is that causing you to question, should you continue with it?
The answer is all of the above.
All of the above.
As an entrepreneur, as a person who builds these things for public consumption, you are forced to encounter your own self, if you will, as you walk through the challenges of really building something that is trying to build revenue and make some money. The last couple of weeks, and certainly this month, I think in aggregate is going to be a very significant shift in terms of the actual fiscal success, month over month. There have definitely some times where I've asked myself whether this is the right place to spend my time, whether this is the absolute best use of my skills, and whether there's a lot of time on QA and support and forums and community building that don't actually generate revenue. So I think those are great questions to encounter. I think they're very important. So the second part of your question or part of your question is how do you make decisions, really, or how do you continue to gain the courage or to not quit, essentially? Mm-hmm. And the answer is I don't really know. Every single day, I feel like I encounter emotions that want me to quit. They want to get me to quit, and so I don't think that's a battle that ever really ends. I think you have to encounter it forward with courage, and then you just walk through it. And so, every single day, I look at the stats. I look at the traffic numbers. I look at the conversions. I look at the sales today. I looked, and I get a reporting kind of 24 hours or for the previous day. And so yesterday, February 22nd, I sold 6 copies for a total profit of $123.98. And that is pretty stinking low in comparison to what I was doing quite literally 15 days ago, where I sold a record-breaking 242 for a profit of only almost $2,500, so $2,479. And so a radical departure, really, from what had happened just two and a half weeks ago. And that is a significant bummer. That's a significant gap to jump in. But without, again, I think the core motive, which was I wanted to build an app for myself, without that staying stable, I think that dip, that difference can really rock someone. So as long as you have, I think, that core foundational motive, that drive, you ask the big questions of why did you begin, why did you start, if you continue to answer those and those answers are still the same, I think you'll make it through.
And so you have this uncanny ability to start and finish things, right? And then you also have this ability to know when you need to dismount. So how many projects have you started over the years? Like that you've kind of...
Hundreds.
I saw one time that you released like this sale of like domains that you had purchased. So like how many domains have you purchased? Thousands?
Oh, I'm afraid to... It probably isn't 1,000, mm-hmm. but it is definitely within the multiples of hundreds. If I were to take a stab over the course of the last 17 years, mm-hmm. It's probably 600-700. Wow. I know even at this exact moment in time, I have about 80 mm-hmm. that I'm paying for, that are not all active, but certainly that I'm paying for. I have 20 that are being deregistered or kind of in the midst of a drop-off. Mm-hmm. And so that brings me into about 100, 110 or something. And so that's just at this very moment. There have been periods where I've had many more active and an impossible amount to even do anything. But I've been paring all those down. Mm-hmm. And it's been really helpful as I've gotten more secure in who I am, as I've kind of analyzed and focused my time and efforts, the amount of domains that I own and manage and pay for becomes much, much less. And that's really good.
Awesome. And how did this entrepreneur spirit, you know, develop in you? Were you always an entrepreneur as a kid, or did you just realize I don't want to work for anybody after a while?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think if I look back in retrospect, and certainly as I kind of diagnose, you can examine and identify a number of clear patterns. I think in second grade was a very definitive moment where I created a small kind of pop-up shop where I sold origami ninja stars for 50 cents to my friends. And, you know, I could glorify that, almost create a myth around it and say, like, that's the moment that, you know, I realized I want to be an entrepreneur. Even before that, there was a small DOS game, Windows game that was the lemonade stand. And so you could say, you know, create a myth around that and anthologize that as some part of my grand story. But I think that would be, I think that would be that's too liberal. Mm-hmm. That'd be too unfair. What I have discovered though is that entrepreneurship is not really a skill. I don't think it's a habit. I don't think it's a particular technique. Rather, I think entrepreneurship really is a muscle. And I think it's one that needs to be practiced and worked on, just like you would in a gym. You know, everyone has two arms and can certainly do some push-ups here and there, but not everyone's training those arms. Not everyone's practicing and building the techniques required to be able to do 100 push-ups instead of one. And so every time I encounter someone who has that bug or feels like that's a big part of their future or wants to explore that area a little bit more, I say, hey, that's great. Are you practicing?
Mm-hmm.
Are you working on that? Are you intentionally working on that as a particular area of interest? And I think the word intentional is really the key. It's how intentional are you? Or are you trying to somehow organically fall into some position where entrepreneurship, whatever that means to you, begins to make sense? So with that in frame of mind, with that kind of frame, I can begin to see that I have been practicing this thing for quite some time. And so now, in many ways, I feel like I'm reaping some of the benefit of just not quitting. I'm practicing, refining my approach, getting better at it every single time, and that's a good thing.
We're going to take it all the way back with Brandy, You Don't Know Me Like You Used To, off of Never Say Never. So for you, entrepreneurship is a muscle. And for us as entrepreneurs, the more that we use that muscle, the better that we get, or the better that we learn how to dismount the horse before we, you know, continue with certain things. And so I definitely get that, because I've dismounted a lot.
I think it's a little bit of both. Uh-huh. You know, the thing with entrepreneurship is there's no guarantee. You don't increase, I think, your chance of success. I think the success quotient stays the same. I think people have actually proven this statistically. But what I think that I have gained is that my intuition is better. Now, how do you qualify intuition? Again, it's kind of a nebulous space. But as I encounter a new idea, as I think about new projects, I just have a better grasp of the complexity, perhaps even what I would define as success, the time required, the resources required, the people that I need to be involved. I just have a better intuition of when I sit and encounter new ideas, say, you know, instead of just a random guess, I could say, well, I think that is going to require at least 3 partners. It'll probably take 90 days to get some sort of rough concept off the ground. And maybe even a dollar figure associated with what that might actually take. Mm-hmm. And that intuition, if you will, is just, it's been more refined. I can encounter an idea and say, okay, great. With all that in mind, well, is that worth it for me to undertake? And the answer now is typically no. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what happens as you practice, as you refine your entrepreneurship muscle, if you will. You just get a better intuition, make better decisions, and that's always helpful.
So what do you think is your key gifting? I think a lot of people may look at you and say you're an entrepreneur, but what would you say about the things that you do? You know, because you lead the Iron Yard, you have Desk.pm, you consult a lot of people and companies that you never even talk about. Because a lot of times the things that we do are not necessarily our key giftings, but how we use those giftings.
Yeah, I agree 100%. If I have no qualms, no problems, no ego around software development. That is clearly what I do and have done. Mm-hmm. For most of my professional career. Am I the best in that? Not even close. I can work my way around APIs and documentation, and I can get stuff done. But I'm not at the top of the pile. There's absolutely no way about that. What I am really good at, and what I think under kind of creates a foundation for how I can move those pieces forward in a technology project or software, is that one, I don't hesitate with decision making. And that's very critical when you lead a company and certainly a startup, is I have very little hesitation and I commit and then I do, which I guess segues very nicely. And the second thing is just I have a bias toward action is what Scott Belsky is kind of called that phrase, if you will. I have a bias toward action. I just cannot help but actually go do something. You throw me an idea, and the first thing I want to do is go test it. It's not enough for me just to sit and think about it. And I'm very almost kinesthetic, if you will. I have to go touch it, do something, write some piece of code to see if that theory or assumption is actually true. Mm-hmm. And third is, in terms of my leadership, I really try to encourage people to take risks. And just really help them think through the great possibilities. I think it's something that people come away with after I meet with them one-on-one, in a conversation, a coaching session, or even something even more organic, is that they feel more hopeful about the future. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you call that a skill or a gifting, but I don't want anyone to ever leave feeling like, oh, God, John just rained on my parade, or I feel less inclined to go act, or I feel less hopeful about the future. I always want to help make sure that people leave a conversation with me feeling like I can go do that. I feel positive, I feel more energy, I feel more potential is can be realized, and that there's just this under kind of lying hope that I can communicate to people. So again, I don't know if that's a skill or a gifting, but certainly a goal of mine is I want to feel everyone feel really good about the time they spent with me.
Nice. So you're an encourager. You definitely have an encouraging, exhorting thing that you do.
Could have said that and just saved you 5 minutes on this podcast.
You know what? Hey, if you want to encourage somebody in their dreams, hey, that's what this podcast is all about. It's having conversations with people who struggle but keep going. I think that's the biggest thing about starting and finishing, is that it's the in between, it's the dash in between. It's kind of like, how do you not give up? You keep going. How do you get over the hill? You keep walking up the hill. And I know for me, even when I was, you know, attempting to say, okay, I'm going to do this writing thing again. I love writing, but it took me years to admit, hey, I'm a writer and it's okay. You know, I went to grad school and undergrad, and I've always written since I was 5 years old. I've always been a writer. But it was like this fear of, well, what do you do with being a writer? And for me, you definitely encouraged me with Start to Finish. Like, it came from the conversation that we had that said, okay, let me rethink about how I'm presenting my entire self. It's okay to be exactly who I am. And it's okay to write daily about my experiences and about my life, and to be able to encourage people in starting and finishing. So you definitely encourage people to start and finish. And just seeing that you're open and very transparent about, you know, your failures as well as your successes, I think that really helps. Like, you know, the fact that, you know, you don't necessarily have to have a conversation with you to know, hey, you're moving to Austin, Texas again. And that's like, okay, wow, like, he's about to springboard to another place. I wonder what's going to come out of this. So it's definitely encouraging to see how you allow God to not only move you, but also to move your family. And even seeing your daughter, she's a writer now. Like, that's going to be amazing in the future, yeah. You know, to see how your kids grow.
Yeah, I love that. My oldest, who's 8, mm-hmm. She writes very consistently. Actually, more than most people, she blogs. She blogs almost daily. So I love that. I think, and she's learning to process information better. She's becoming a better communicator, and even if she never becomes a writer full time or in anything like that, it'll mm-hmm. it'll make her a better communicator that will serve her in any capacity. Went in any job, in any industry, so I'm really happy about that.
Man, I just can't get enough of this album, Hello or Goodbye by Christian Grey.
1, 2, 3, 4. Is it hello? Is it hello or goodbye? Which one am I to say? I don't want to be fooled into falling in love. Stay for a while. It seems like we were just getting to know one another so well. But oh well, hello always means goodbye someday. I won't stop telling you every day how much I need you around. I know you're up in the sky, but I don't know when you'll be back down. I wake up looking for you, but I guess it depends on the day. Hello, goodbye, just tell me which one to say. My mother's voice was soft rain. My daddy's was more like a hurricane. Saying, son, you better learn to pray. I'm like the sun, better learn to shine. I'm feeling blind, cause I've been gone for a while. And my daughter's days have been blue and gray. I can see the same story in her eyes, saying, won't stop telling you every day how much I need you around. I know you're up in the sky, but I don't know when you be back down. I wake up looking for you, but I guess it depends on the day. Is it hello or goodbye? Just tell me which one to say.
Tell us about your writing. I think your writing, you know, I should have been writing earlier today. I am learning that I need to write early in the morning and stop waiting. So now I have to write from 1:30 to 5:30 in order to get this project done. So what's your writing life like? And I think that your writing life really, really will wake a lot of us up.
Yeah, my I've organically stumbled upon this as I've refined my approach, but I'm very comfortable with being able to tell someone very succinctly that my writing happens all in the morning, and that the muse, if you know, whatever, however you think about her or him or that idea of the muse, of the creative force, that force visits me in the morning. Now, I wrote a post actually recently about this, about how I think about the muse, and really, the muse visits me when I get my butt in the seat and start intentionally thinking about my writing. I do this super early in the morning, typically around 4 to 5 in the morning, and I'll write for a few hours. And about 90% of all my writing during the day happens in that particular period of time. I don't know why that works. I don't know how it works, but it's something that works for me. And I'm the most clear in my thinking. I have the most time. There's very little interruptions. My kids are still sleeping. And so that, for me, again, has been determined as the most optimal time for my writing. And then then it goes all downhill from there. Like, if I'm trying to write later in the day, it just does not work. On the flip end of the day, which is fascinating, though, the back end of the day is where I do all my software programming. Kind of same concept, but for whatever reason, I've discovered that writing software, I'm most clear or most interested or whatever, or discipline, if you can call it that, is when I write my software late at night. That's not to say it's good or bad. It's just how it is for me, and it really works. So for anyone listening, as they think about their writing or their software development or really any discipline for that matter, I think it's really important to see if you can find that space and time that really is optimal for you, whatever that activity is, and see if you can continue to lock that in your schedule, in your calendar, and then just execute against it.
Can you tell us more about what has inspired you to become more minimal in your technology use and, you know, in everything? Like, even your setup is extremely minimal as well. What has inspired that for you? Have you, like, been looking at Josh Becker's website, or you've just realized over time?
I don't even know who Josh Becker is, but it sounds like a person I need to...
His website is becomingaminimalist.com, and he'll be on the show soon as well. Well, becomingminimalist.com, and he'll be on the show soon. But that's all he talks about, being a minimalist, and it's very simplistic in how to be a minimalist, not just yourself, but your family and your business and things like that.
Awesome. Well, I'll definitely check that out. I'm not sure what I call it, but for certain, for me, the removing as many distractions as I possibly can is really, really important. I think there's something, I think there's a very intimate connection between a person who has discovered why they were created, mm-hmm. and who has really been able to lock in, you know, their gifts, their gifting, their strengths, the great value that they can create. And the amount of noise and extraneous things that are consuming their time. So I think there's an intimate relation between that. As someone becomes more focused in their work, they realize they require less and they demand less distraction. And so as I've gotten older, wiser, more experienced, maybe jaded, I don't know, but as I've gotten more experienced as a person and as a professional, I've realized that I just don't need a lot of that extra extraneous stuff. And so I've... social media, personal social media use, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, et cetera, et cetera. I've removed all of that from my world because I'm very clear on where I need to spend my time. And I love that. And those things are not hurting me in terms of not being active on them. And I love that. I think there's a very clear relationship between those things. So I think... you know, so for those people who haven't figured it out, I think those people, in very generalist terms, those people are easily distracted, and they're still trying to figure it out, and so they're engaged in a number of different things, too many things, and I think the problem is that they're not able to sort through it as easily as if they begin to just pare down and just figure out, okay, why am I here? Like, what really is going on? And where should I be spending my time? So I think it's just, age, just experience as I've gone along, and I've been very, very, very thankful for it.
John, I thank you so much for your time. It has been a pleasure to listen to you. It's still a pleasure, you know, to grow with you even more. And being able to have you as a resource has been amazing. He's been very instrumental in my own blogging and writing. You can definitely check out his resources at john.do. Check out the app, desk.pm. It's available on the App Store on your Mac computers. It is a jewel, and it is something that you really should invest in. And I know a lot of people were questioning early on the $30 price tag, and I've gotten friends to purchase it myself because it's like, it's worth $30. It removes all of the distractions of your blogging. You can add several blogs. I do guest blogging on other people's platforms, and I've been able to add that, and it's just easy to do. So I hope you enjoyed this time with John, learning how to write, learning how to press and persevere through all of your questions and mistakes, and just learning how to discover your own purpose, and that helps you eliminate distractions. So thank you once again, John, for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for joining me today. This is episode 9. We are done with it. Our last song is Dating, Biggie, Jay-Z, or Nas. If you're into hip-hop, you know that that's always been a hot topic. But if you have not reviewed us on iTunes, please do. Reviews mean so much to us. We've been able to maintain in the new and noteworthy, but we want to keep going and keep getting people to listen and be encouraged and inspired to start and finish. Have a great day.
So Dayton, we just finished talking about the video you put out, throwing away all your CDs, which was crazy, by the way.
Yeah.
And we also spoke about the negative impact that hip-hop has on these kids.
Right.
But now I want you to talk about how hip-hop affected you personally and the impact that it's made on your life. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Let's talk about that.
See, as a child, I would take advice from moms and my dad. They tried to show me right from wrong. They cared for me and raised me right. I saw them making honest living, working day and night at jobs. But as a teenager, I wasn't tight for cars, the money and fame. I envied the life of stars. Well, rappers on the screen were wearing nice and all. My parents were working hard just to fight the odds. I had to work too, so I thought life was hard, and I ain't wanna repeat my parents' cycle. No. And so I stopped taking my advice from mom and dad, and I started taking my advice from Nas. I listened to the words he would say on the mic. He had it all, and he ain't worked a day in his life. You see, he wrote rhymes, did some music, and bang, he got the money, the cars, the jewels, and the fame. In videos, I would see him do when his thing. I saw how a career making music could change my life, and so I started doing the same. Writing rhymes, I was trying to make some moves in the game. But DJs and labels and these A&Rs were all looking for the next Biggie, Jay, or Nas. And so I started rapping like them, hoping I could get signed to go platinum like them. And I had never killed a cat or played block dealing crack, but I spit from killer drug dealer raps. Besides, everyone was feeling that. I thought all I had to do to get a deal was act. But I put on the act for so long, I started to believe all the lies in my own songs. Like an actor trapped in his movie robe, I played the gangster in and out of the studio, imitating all my favorite MCs till it really became what I was claiming to be. A thug, my mother was ashamed, she would grieve cause she started seeing changes in me. Then me and my friends started picking up the habits. Like in the studio, we would puff puff pass it. We seen Big and Puff in the videos, popping Chris sipping Mo. So me and my friends started hitting up the liquor store. And man, we thought that we were so cool. It's Nas, Big and Jay drank and they smoked too. We would mimic these dudes to add validity to our songs, but instead it shaped our identity. Like they taught us how to treat a chick. They said they wasn't worth loving, they only good for sleeping with. They said the value was in what we own, so we went and bought some chains with lovely stones. They said a real man owns a gun, so we thought we should be holding one to overcome. We followed the footsteps of Jay and Dame. They showed us how to start a label by slaying a cane. So now we living their life, selling drugs and sleeping with different women tonight. And the songs they made seem like the sinning was right, but they ain't tell us that a life of sin ends with a price. No, instead of telling us truth, they were keeping us down, leading us to a grave 6 feet in the ground. We were tripping off the weed and the Henny sipping, catching STDs from sleeping with many women. This pregnant girl said that the child was mine. Playing thug got me cut from my 9 to 5. My mom seen me out and about and up to no good, so she kicked me out of the house. Man, my homie had them rocks for sale. He hit the block and failed and never got the deal. Instead, he was locked in jail, and some of our other friends lived by the gun and was shot and killed. Instead of climbing to the top, we failed, trying to live for things that would not fulfill. We followed these rappers and did not excel, cause the high life they glorified was not for real. They flaunted their riches, knowing we was gonna follow, but disowned us and said they're not a role model. Refusing to take responsibility for the killing sprees and people dying from an ill disease. How could we embrace this facade? These idols have become all replacements for God. So many lives wasted and lost from trying to imitate the best of seeds. Biggie, Jay-Z, and Nas.
Who's the best MCs? Biggie, Jay-Z, and Nas.
Man, the voice of truth is always speaking. It's a small, still voice. But if we're always tuning into the lies that the father of lies is pushing, we're not giving ourselves a chance to hear that voice. That's why we need to turn off all of this trash and just tune into that voice. Man, some years back, I tuned into his voice, and my life has never been the same since.